It does give Gazprom, as that major exporter, the optionality to direct gas to one market over another.
Planned Russia-China gas pipeline. It's Wednesday, January 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, UN aid for Tonga. Why Very Asian went viral. Former Guantanamo Bay detainee speaks. Depression increases during COVID. Packing foam from shellfish. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As winter bites, Europe is facing a gas shortage, with lower volumes of gas exports from Russia forcing a big spike in prices. But the volatility of Russia's gas supply could be about to get worse, as Moscow plans to build a new pipeline to China, which could give Russia the power to sell gas to the highest bidder. Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA from London.
From the frozen expanses of Siberia, Russia is already sending some natural gas to China. The Power of Siberia 1 pipeline opened in 2019, tapping the gas fields in Russia's Far East to help fuel the Chinese economy. Tom Marzek-Mansa is head of gas analytics at ICIS.
Our Siberia 1 uses gas that is not connected to the fields that can supply the European market. So it's not a question at the moment, at least, of gas from Russia going to China being at a loss to gas that could go into Europe.
But that could soon change. Moscow and Beijing are close to agreeing a second pipeline, the Power of Siberia 2, which would double gas exports from Russia to China. It would cross through Mongolia and into the power-hungry industrial regions near Beijing. It would also join up Russia's internal gas network, connecting China with the same gas fields in Russia's Yamal Peninsula that supply Europe. Again, Tom Marzek-Mansa.
It does give Gazprom, as that major exporter, the optionality to direct gas to one market over another.
That could give Russia considerable leverage, says Filip Medunich of the European Council on Foreign Relations.
Technically, it is hard to tell whether the pricing system will be designed in a way that there is going to be the possibility to sell to the highest bidder. But I think that Russia, in its intent, is definitely eyeing in this direction to be able to use it as a leverage, at least rhetorically, in the coming decade.
Russia has massed over 100,000 troops on the border with Ukraine. The West has threatened crippling sanctions if Russia invades. And there are other incentives for Moscow to find new customers for its gas, say analysts. Again, Tom Marzek-Mansa of ICIS.
The trajectory of the European Union, in particular in terms of decarbonisation, is that gas will have a diminishing role over the medium to long term.
But navigating a new Chinese market won't be easy for Moscow, says Medunich.
China is well known for using its political, economic, also military posture and weight, and to be a tough negotiating partner, and allegedly also considering itself rather as the big hegemon here, and Russia as the junior partner.
There is speculation that the deal for the Power of Siberia 2 pipeline could be signed during next month's Winter Olympic Games in Beijing, but there's yet to be any official confirmation. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Australia posts new record single-day COVID death toll. China's Himalayan buildup extends to disputed Bhutan border. Ex-Guinean President Conde flown abroad for medical care. Thailand facing crackdown on freedoms. North Korea confirms latest missile test. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. Welcome back to VOA Asia. The United Nations reports emergency teams are on standby to provide humanitarian assistance to thousands of victims of a volcanic eruption and tsunami on the South Pacific island of Tonga. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Planes carrying humanitarian aid are unable to land in Tonga until the island's main runway is cleared of a thick coating of ash from Saturday's undersea volcanic eruption. While a planned large-scale humanitarian operation is put on hold, UN officials say the government and local aid agencies are assessing the scale of damage and subsequent needs. They say the Tonga government confirms two people have been killed and 150 houses have been damaged and destroyed on the main island of Tongatapu. Jens Laerke is spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. He says the latest reports indicate the country's capital, Nuku'alofa, has sustained a lot of infrastructure damage. He says there is much concern over the well-being of people on two small low-lying islands who so far have not been reached.
Clean water sources are another concern for the Tongan government, who have issued advice requesting that people only drink bottled water, as water sources may be contaminated from the ash, debris, and seawater. Assessments by the Tongan authorities are ongoing and should provide a better estimate of what is required.
The World Health Organization reports 89 displaced people are sheltering in evacuation centers on the island. Others, rendered homeless by the disaster, are staying with relatives and friends. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says the tsunami did extensive damage to the country's telecommunications infrastructure, including the undersea internet cable. However, he says the island's medical warehouses and health facilities are undamaged, fully functional, and able to treat people with health problems stemming from the calamitous event.
The concern, of course, is the around 2 centimeters of ash and dust that has fallen on Tongatapu, raising concerns of air pollution and potential contamination of water supplies. Said to avoid the consequences of ash, will remain indoors and use masks if going out and drink bottled water.
The WHO warns further volcanic activity cannot be ruled out and urges people to stay alert and seek higher ground if tsunami alerts are issued. Tonga is a COVID-free zone and has very strict protocols to preserve that status. UN officials note one of the first rules of humanitarian action is to do no more harm. They say they will make sure that all necessary protocols for entry into the country are followed. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still to come on VOA Asia, turning a racist voicemail into a show of Asian American pride. Happening now in Asia, the Office of the Prime Minister of Tonga released a statement Tuesday confirming at least 3 deaths from the massive volcanic eruption Saturday. The Parliament Speaker told New Zealand TV while in Auckland that he hopes some communication to the islands will be restored in the next 2 days. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The Lunar New Year is fast approaching, but on New Year's Day in the U.S., when a Korean-American TV news anchor in St. Louis, Missouri, told the story of her traditional holiday meal, she received a racist message in response. That message and the anchor's reaction have sparked a viral conversation about anti-Asian racism. At the end of a New Year's Day segment highlighting what Americans traditionally eat on the holiday, KSDK TV anchor Michelle Lee told viewers what her family enjoyed.
I ate dumpling soup. That's what a lot of Korean people do.
Soon after, a viewer left a voicemail and Lee posted a video of herself listening to the minute-long message.
She's being very Asian and, I don't know, she can keep her Korean to herself.
Lee says the caller's words hurt her deeply.
Takes me back to my, from being a kid, or it takes me back to like that one time this happened, or that one time that person said this. So it really, it compounds the scars you've already built through your lifetime.
The video now has more than 3.7 million views. Using the hashtag #VeryAsian, many prominent Asian Americans like Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, and actress and comedian Margaret Cho weighed in to support Lee.
I think it's just really important that we look to these issues and that these moments in society go viral, that people see that their ignorance is being watched.
Anti-Asian sentiment is nothing new in the United States. There were legal limits on immigration from China and other countries from the 1880s until 1965. And the U.S. government interned Japanese Americans during World War II. Leilani Nishime is a professor of communication at University of Washington.
There's this stereotype that Asians are never quite American enough, are never really American, and in many ways have to get rid of their Asian culture in order to be American, in ways that we don't ask other people, like, say, Europeans, for example.
Other experts say U.S. schools fail to teach the history of discrimination against Asian Americans. Without that background, the current wave of slurs and attacks cannot be seen as part of systemic discrimination. Vincent Pham is an associate professor of civic communication at Willamette University in Oregon.
Well, let's actually talk about race and racial difference, and what does this mean, and what's the systemic versions of it, and how does this affect how we engage and relate with each other? And then that changes how we have to think about racism beyond being an individual thing, right? But as a structural aspect of our society that is reinforced by cultural norms and representation.
The outpouring of social media support for Lee has helped her move past the hurtful racism of the call.
I think that's something that we are really coming to terms with as a world, because we're all becoming more mixed. We're all becoming more appreciative of who we are. We all are embracing our true selves.
And with that, an ugly moment is turning into a social media movement, highlighting America's promise as a multi-ethnic, multiracial society.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Japan's environment minister says the country will gradually phase out coal plants over the next two decades while developing new technologies to reduce, capture, and recycle carbon. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia's Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. It has been 20 years since the first prisoners in the War on Terror arrived at the U.S. military detention facility in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. At least 800 people have been detained there over the last two decades, the vast majority of whom were never charged with a crime. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb spoke with Mansour Adefi, a former detainee who has devoted his life to closing the prison.
Today, I have a message to Biden. Please close Guantanamo, you know. You know, that place only stand in American history, American values, American policy.
Yemeni national Mansour Adefi says he went to Afghanistan when he was 18 to research Islamic paramilitary groups for one of the Islamic institutes in Yemen. He never returned.
When I arrived in Afghanistan, Lima, after a couple months, 9/11 happened.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... down, we'll hear all of us soon.
Then I was kidnapped by one of the warlords, sold from one to another, then sold to the Americans to be Al-Qaeda.
He says the Americans were looking for a middle-aged Egyptian al-Qaeda leader and 9/11 insider. Adafi said that after repeated torture and interrogation, he falsely admitted to being that man. He turned 19 while imprisoned in a black site and was one of the first prisoners shipped to the Guantanamo Bay detention facility, opened by then-President George W. Bush in 2002 to hold and interrogate suspected enemy combatants.
It has been necessary to move these individuals to an environment where they can be held secretly, questioned by experts, and when appropriate, prosecuted for terrorist acts.
We arrived, you shackled, booted, you know, an orange jumpsuit, and they marketed us to the world as the worst of the worst terrorists. So basically, when you arrived, they cut your clothes, threw on the floor, hosing you and brushing you with brooms.
And in addition to the humiliation, Adafi said the torture did not stop.
When the interrogator used to, the torture means to be naked and beating, I told him, you are a terrorist. I said, you are the terrorist. You are who they act like a terrorist now.
The U.S. later dropped its accusation that he was the Egyptian al-Qaeda leader. But that accusation cost him 14 years, his entire 20s lost inside Guantanamo's barbed wire fences. Today, 39 detainees remain at Guantanamo, only a dozen of whom have been charged or convicted of war crimes. But those dozen men are considered very dangerous, so much so that neither President Obama nor Biden have been able to shut down the prison altogether, despite promises to do so.
The administration remains dedicated to closing the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay. There's nothing's changed about that.
But advocates told a New America panel they want to see action matching those promises. They say the administration must try those like 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and stop holding the others indefinitely.
For the victims of 9/11, it's been 20 years. Do you think that it's fair to them that they go through 30 years, that they go through 40 years, that eventually these guys die of old age in Guantanamo and there was never anything resembling justice?
The war is over. There's no longer the legal justification to hold them in the first place.
Yemen does not have a functioning government, so Adafi was not sent home. He now lives in Serbia under tight security restrictions, a place he did not want to go, and where he says he still feels trapped.
When you have no legal status, you cannot work, you cannot communicate with your family, the stigma of Guantanamo, people are afraid, no one can talk to you, and you cannot get married, you cannot. So basically, yeah, it's like Guantanamo 2.0.
Writing, he says, has helped him cope with the trauma, and he hopes his new book, started while shackled to the classroom floor at Guantanamo, will help people understand why he feels the prison must close its doors. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Making headlines in Asia, China on Monday canceled plans to sell tickets to the public for the Winter Olympics in Beijing, as the number of COVID-19 cases in the country reached its highest point since March 2020. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The number of people who suffered a major depressive order worldwide rose 28% in 2020 during the pandemic to an estimated 246 million cases, and those suffering from anxiety disorders rose 26%. These findings come from a Lancet survey using data from studies collected in North America, Europe, and East Asia. As VOA's Laurel Bowman reports, the study found women fared worse than men.
Anxiety and depression are up in the age of COVID. A Lancet survey estimates the number of people worldwide suffering from a major depressive disorder rose by 28% in 2020. Those with anxiety disorders worldwide increased by 26%. The effects of lockdowns, school and business closures, and the spread of the virus in general are among the factors blamed for the rise, say researchers.
So that was a good thing, wasn't it?
Margaret Sullivan, who is 87, has been stuck at home caring for her 92-year-old husband.
There are days when I'm really sad, but I don't know whether it's the COVID that makes me sad or the other things going on that were going on anyway. For us, when you know you don't have that many years left, it's a lost year.
the elderly can be especially at risk for both isolation and faring poorly if they catch the virus. But mental health experts say they are hearing from young people the most. During the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic, an estimated 1 in 4 youths globally experienced clinically elevated depression symptoms, while 1 in 5 young people experienced higher anxiety, according to JAMA Pediatrics. Dr. Beth Salcedo heads the Ross Center for Anxiety and Depression in Washington, D.C.
I think in this country, certainly stigma has really changed in the last 20 years, and certainly with our younger population, they're talking about anxiety and depression a lot, whereas people, you know, in my generation and older didn't talk about it so much.
22-year-old Eva Zarpas had her college studies go virtual during COVID-19. She says the isolation has heightened the anxiety and depression she already felt.
Being unable to connect with large groups of people in the way that, you know, humans are used to. It was really hard just to wake up, you know? Being asleep was my favorite thing about the day because I didn't have to be awake and be thinking and wanting to be with people but not being able to.
Her 14-year-old sister Stella suffered too.
It's important for kids to always be around each other. Just that sheer isolation, which really made it difficult to kind of cope with all the other things when you're not getting just basic needs met by talking to other people.
Experts say it will take time for the mental health effects of COVID-19 to pass. Dr. Beth Salcedo.
People have lost a lot in this last year and a half. It'll be 2 years, and they're going to have to put their lives back together. And I think it's going to take a while. And I think the ramifications from an emotional point of view are going to take a long time to fully recover.
Demand for treatment for anxiety disorders has increased since the start of the pandemic, according to the American Psychological Association. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Finally, on VOA Asia, a company in the U.S. state of California has developed an eco-friendly version of plastic foam that could become a game changer in the packaging industry. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
Plastic foam is a common packing product made of non-biodegradable styrene, a tough-to-recycle material known to break into small pieces that can end up in oceans where wildlife can ingest it. But now a California company has developed an eco-friendlier version of plastic foam made of chitin, a substance found in the shells of crustaceans like crabs, shrimp, and lobster. And unlike plastic foam, it's biodegradable. Cruise Foam CEO and co-founder John Feltz spoke with VOA via Skype.
What we were able to do is take that material and really develop a process that could create a structural foam that had that high performance.
The material is lightweight, but strong enough to protect not only fragile items like electronics, but also heavy and expensive objects such as television sets. What motivated Feltz and his co-founder was our love of the ocean.
As surfers, we hated seeing the enormous amount of plastic pollution entering it every year, and we knew there had to be a better solution out there.
Cruise Foam is just one of a growing number of companies that are appealing to corporations and consumers' desire to become eco-friendly, says environmental advocate Scott Cassell. He is CEO and founder of the Product Stewardship Institute, whose mission is to reduce the health and environmental impact of consumer products across their life cycle. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
With the impacts of climate change, with the global plastic crisis that we have had, the consumers are really thinking about this right now. They're pushing companies to think better and think more longer range. And what Cruise Foam has done is developed an interesting, innovative technological solution that uses a good material in place of a bad one.
Cruise Foam is currently in discussions with several American corporations to provide their protective packaging needs. It hopes one day to replace all petroleum-based plastics with natural materials for the sake of the planet. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Gaskill in Washington. Enjoy the day.